There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
You are the one that actually starts, or has been in the past.
Yeah, you just say, hey guys, welcome to
another episode, or like...
I don't know.
Welcome back to the Mostly Lit podcast.
Or just welcome, guys. Or welcome...
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah,
say welcome back.
Been a little hiatus, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Or welcome. Just welcome.
All right.
Welcome, all right, welcome forward.
Hello guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Mostly Lit podcast. I'm Ray.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Derek.
The trio is back. How does it feel?
It's been 4 years.
No, 4 years?
For you guys, it's been five years. 5 years
it's
for
been,
me.
It's been 5 years in general.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Mm. I thought I was going to be nervous coming back, but surprisingly, I'm just like calm. It's okay, like... normal.
Oh my, 5 years? Four?
It's been five.
We
years.
Were really young, guys, talking about books with such authority.
I mean, it's I weren't that
and,
young.
And such vim. I think I was, vim. Am I not the
you
age
were, you
that...
You were young comparison to now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I'm sure you've grown in terms of, you know,
I mean,
intellect.
I hope
we're fully
so.
In our 30s now. We're all like, in
don't...
our
30s.
How old are you, Alex?
I'm 32.
Oh, okay. Bray, oh, you don't talk about that, do you?
No, I am.
She thinks she's Mariah Carey.
30. I'm 30. I turned 31 in like 2 months.
Oh yeah.
I can't believe it. Have you guys enjoyed like this process of aging since we last were all together?
Boy, I mean, I feel like I've lived many lives in between 2019 and 2024.
Same.
Because remember, we ended, and then we had a pandemic.
Oh,
and then,
my God, yeah.
And then that was like 3 years of our lives taken away from us, essentially, in
yeah.
many ways. And then even in between that, life was happening for each of us in particular ways. So like...
And yeah. we've all like, yeah, grown and lived different lives. Well, and
I don't feel like I've aged, but I feel like I've grown, if that makes sense. Like, I don't feel like I'm older,
yeah.
but I feel like I'm wiser.
That's good.
Do you know what I mean?
You don't look older. Like, you know wrinkles, so you must have been...
I don't age.
I see.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I feel wiser, but I was always wise, you know? But I feel wiser to my wisdom.
Do I feel wiser?
A wise man doesn't think
I feel
he's
wiser to my wisdom.
You're okay? wiser to your wisdom. I don't think no. I'm wiser. I think...
Do you feel like you're more mature?
I am, yeah. I mean, of course. Like, I do feel like I'm mature, but I feel like back in the day, I had this level of certainty about who I was
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and, like, how I thought and, like, that was going to be me forever.
Yeah.
And then life happens and then, you know, you go through this process of unlearning and being thrown into different experiences and you just have to adapt and change. I can't say for certain that... Not that I know who I am, but I am who I am now. And I welcome what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I could things could change. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. It's like,
I find that so strange, especially for you though, because what? Like you were a lawyer.
I am a lawyer
you,
now.
You are a lawyer. Yeah, you were doing like big boy stuff.
Yeah.
And still feeling like, oh, I don't know myself.
No, do you know what it is? Like, I think it's more so like, I went through, I don't know, like I was always very certain about who I was, right? Mm. And I feel like that came across with like, how I would read books and, you know, review them and cuss out some authors if I didn't like their work. But I think in understanding life and just the ups and downs of it, I've just become a bit more soft and gentle.
Yeah.
And like compassionate, but like just so soft and gentle. And it's like a constant state of nervousness, but in a good way. Because I don't know how to explain it, but I'm less certain, but I like it.
Yeah, I get that.
Well, we never really know ourselves, do we? We never know who we're going to be at whatever point, right?
Yeah.
So when you're in your early 20s, you think you know everything. It's an arrogance of youth, right?
I miss it though. And I want to go back.
But then your life, in your late 20s is so different.
Yeah.
To your life in your early 20s.
You know that Mercury retrograde? What is it called again?
The Saturn return. Oh Lord, God.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. Once you hit 27, I don't know what it was. It hit 27 to 29. Those 3 years,
too much.
They actually like beat me up.
A lot happens in that time.
It's funny because I've never actually felt like I know myself. So you know, some people are like, "Oh, like I know who I am," and they have this pride and they feel confident. And I've never felt like that. I've always felt like my personality is very malleable. Like it can just change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some will say that's mental illness. It is a little bit. It is a little bit of BPD in there. But it's just kind of like I feel like if I was ever secure and felt like I know who I am, then I would be uninterested in anything outside of my own perspective, and I wouldn't want to be like that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's a big assumption to make, though.
I feel like that's what it is. I feel like as you get older as well, like regular people, they harden. Yeah. They harden into. It's kind of like in Philip Pullman's what's it called, his Dark Materials.
Yeah.
How their demons are always shifting when they're children, but as they get older, it becomes
solidifies.
Yeah, solidifies, and I think that's what Pullman was talking about. As you get into adulthood, personality becomes fixed. You become more inflexible.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I just wouldn't ever want to be like that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
No, I just feel like I feel like I know myself as I am today. I don't know what I'm going to be like in 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to be like in 5. But ultimately, I have a good understanding
of who
I am. So I know what my values are.
Yeah.
I know what my beliefs are, and I'm in that. They can be malleable. I mean, you have to be open to change and be flexible in your stuff until proven otherwise.
I mean, we say that, but then in practice, it's usually.
But then again, if you believe what you believe, and you stand on that belief and you have the authority of that, then you can just run with that. But don't be ignorant, obviously, to the thing. But I think be flexible. That's an important thing. But so we are back.
As a
trio talking about books. I don't even know if my mind is giving me all these things around, oh yeah, we're millennial, black, British book.
Podcast.
And I'm just like,
I'm an author now.
We're both authors.
I'm out here now, you know.
Derek's out here being featured by being my magazine and all these different things.
How's that guy like that journey been for you guys in terms of being published authors? I'm so proud of y'all.
I have a lot to say. Yeah. Generally, but I will keep that for like the longevity of the podcast.
Yeah.
Because there are things I do want to talk about with regards to this industry itself.
Yeah.
However, I will defer to my honorable my honorable friend over here.
It's been weird, you know. It's weird. It still hasn't really sunk in. Whenever I talk to people, they're always like, "Why do you downplay like your achievements and stuff?" And I'm just kind of like,
"Yeah, real talk."
Because it just doesn't feel. I don't know. I think obviously I've got a chip on my shoulder, you know, from my background or whatever. And because it happens so fast as well, you know, like I got two book deals in the same year and the books came out in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really quick. But yeah, I'm enjoying it, man, you know.
Are you writing something now?
Supposed to be, yeah. Supposed to be. It's in my head, but I just can't write long form at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the new book is going to be so completely different to my first two books. Whereas my first two books were experimental and like kind of prose poetry, this novel that I'm writing is just going to be straight, you know, prose. So I need to make sure that I'm... Because in a way, I feel like I need to prove some people wrong. I've spoken to some people about my writing, and the way they talk sometimes suggests that I can't write long form prose and I have to write prose poetry in this kind of fractured way.
That's cool.
And that's not true. I write like that, those books like that, because that's how they needed to be written.
Yeah.
But the next book has to be written in long form.
Okay.
So that's how I'm going to write it.
Interesting.
Yeah, yes,
interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, what about, where are you?
Yeah, what about you, Ray?
Well, no, what about you? Where are you?
What do you...
Where are you on any of this? Where do you want to...
I mean, I've been writing a book for like 5-6 years.
I know, I read some of it.
A very long time ago.
Yeah, ages ago.
But it's... and I think I spent 2 years writing the same chapter and rewriting it. I've got around 50,000 words now.
That's all right. That's cool. You can get a book deal off of that.
I know, but like
I say you can get a book deal like it's just that easy. Sorry.
It's not. I mean, I know people in the industry, but I feel like I'm very hesitant to kind of enter that world. I can't lie. As much as I love it from the sort of the reader perspective, I don't know how I will take it. In terms of just like the politics of the whole industry, other writers, readers. I wrote like, you remember that when I wrote that little chapter in that Muslimic book?
that little chapter, you know?
Yeah, I loved it.
It's not about the burqa.
It's not about the burqa.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Sorry, Mario. The Muslimic book. So I remember people were like, oh, like, did you read any reviews? I'm like, no. Like, why? Is that actually... Unless people come to me about it, like, people have messaged me and sometimes still do, like, kids and, like, teens. I'll be like, oh, thank you, blah, blah, blah. I will never search and go out and see what people have said. I just... Like, I literally, like, wrote it. I hate that chapter, by the way. Like, I just absolutely hate it.
Standard.
And I'm like, that's it, close that. Like, it's out in the world. It's not mine. Like, do whatever you want. And I generally feel like if I was ever to write a book and publish it, that is exactly what it will be. I don't think I could ever read reviews.
Oh, you will.
I don't think so. No.
Trust me, you will.
No, because like me, I know myself. I will find the person. I will be like, hey, let's have a talk. So did you say that?
But you know, it's interesting. on Goodreads, I remember when my first book was published on Goodreads, someone gave it like 1 star. And I'm a member of Goodreads. And I remember I clicked the 1 star review and I scrolled to the bottom where you can comment and reply. And there was a message from Goodreads and it said, take a deep breath. You got a 1 star review. We highly recommend that you do not respond to this review.
So they know.
They know. So there's a message that comes up if you try and respond. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, let me not even...
Okay, Goodreads, you're doing something.
Let me not say nothing, you know. But people on Goodreads can be brutal. And I think it's being on Goodreads as an author that has softened me a bit and made me realize, you know what? Can't be talking wreck about authors writing books because it's not easy. And people these days just seem to be mean for the sake of being mean. Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt like we were critical and we were a bit out of pocket sometimes.
Yeah.
We were young,
yeah. But I think some people like really just get a kick out of being horrible to authors. Mm. And yeah, I don't really fuck with it.
Yeah.
I, like... I'm not obsessed enough with looking at reviews.
Yeah.
With
I've read your reviews.
I'm not obsessed enough. I haven't.
I have. I read everybody's reviews.
I don't know what people are talking about.
Interesting.
What they say.
Okay.
Like everyone keeps asking me, "Oh, how's the book going?" I'm like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know. Do you have it? Tell me, how is it going for you? But again, my motivations are slightly different. I think it. Very much attached to kind of my professional development, I suppose, in a sense. So it's like, so in that kind of non-fiction space, I suppose. I do want to write fiction at some point, but I don't know. I think I idealize where and who I want to be when I write fiction. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like,
I know who I want to be.
Like the wood cabin.
Yeah.
In like the Lake District. Chopping wood.
Yeah. That image shattered very quickly.
Shut off from the world. I don't really... Yeah. I don't have much to give the world.
I have like certain authors, like authoresses that...
Authoress.
Authoress. that I'm like, you know what, like, I love this person's work and it would be like an honor to be considered amongst that. Mm. But
who, like Sarah J. Maas, is that her name?
No, but hold on, we could. I know I'm gonna talk about that.
I don't know what I'm gonna talk about that.
Okay. Anyways, before we get to that, I actually want to ask about like your reading journey since like we've been recording. So we've talked about like how has reading been like for you guys in the last few years that we haven't really been together?
Interesting. That's a good question. I think for me, it's been like really sporadic. There's been times where I'll be just like reading a lot, obsessed,
yeah.
And times when I just can't read. Do you know what I mean? I'll read like 10 pages, and I'm bored.
Yeah.
But it's just getting into the flow of it. So yeah, it's, for me, it's been really up and down. And it's interesting, like, because I blurb a lot of books as well. So I read like a lot of like up and coming books, debut books as well, books that publishers send me when they send me, if they send me books. And then I will read those books because if I say to someone I'm going to blurb a book, I will do it. But I want to make sure I've read the book before I blurb it.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, it's been okay, but I would not say it's been consistent. Like when I was in uni and I was reading a couple of books a week, you know, or when I graduated, it's been a couple of books a week. It's not been like that since.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's been hard.
Yeah.
I'll say it's been hard for me to find a book that captures my attention for long enough. I tend to read for knowledge generally, because if I'm writing essays or I'm writing stuff, I have to read certain chapters for certain things and then kind of pulling that out academically, right? So a lot of my non-fiction reading has only been very specific to kind of what I need it for. And then I'm just in this place of reading part of a book. I don't feel like many non-fiction books are made to be finished, personally. Like, you read...
You mean like the Bible?
No, not the Bible. Not the Bible. Non-fiction books in general.
Okay.
I've read a lot of non-fiction books and I'm like, I'm reading it and I'm like, okay, cool. I've taken what I need to get from it and I've just put it aside and I've been like, all right, cool, next book. Because reading it all the way through is a struggle for me to get to the end. But,
oh, okay.
And then the one thing that's saved me quite a bit is Audible, like the audiobooks. That's the only thing that, like, because I'm always doing something. I don't think I have enough time in a day to sit down and carve out a lot of the time for that. So I'm usually doing something. I'm either on a walk and I put the audiobook on. I'm either doing something mundane and put the audiobook on so that I can at least be keeping up with the reading itself when it comes to fiction and whatnot. But yeah, man, it's been up and down. Yeah. I mean, I've been in and out of certain books.
I went through a massive drought of not reading at all. Like, I think I went through over a year of not picking up a single book. And I think for me, it's very much tied to like mental health. Even though when I am in my, you know, melancholy state, I can't really focus and read. So I'll just find myself more on like social media and just like finding little bits and things that can like up my dopamine here and there. But I have recently kind of like found like this re-love of reading again. And that's probably the big reason why I would say like I was in a much better position to actually like think about doing Mostly Lit again. Just because, like, even like, to be honest, when we, you know, disbanded, obviously, like, it was very emotional. And every time I'd pick up a book, it will remind me of the little group that we had that, like, was no longer there. I can't lie. And I just was, like, so sad about it. So I generally could not pick up a book or, like, you know, I don't think I even walked into Waterstones. It's so long. Yeah, and I didn't realize that it was because of that, but I feel like maybe.
That's like, so funny because you know you're saying, oh, when we disbanded, this just popped into my head, Randy. You're like, oh, it was sad when we disbanded.
Yeah.
When I left, you tweeted, like, oh, this fucking pussy, it's come to leave Mostly Lit. He wants all the attention for himself.
First of all, shout out, I did not tweet that.
You tweeted something like that.
I did not tweet that.
I remember seeing it and being like, oh, my days. Wow, okay.
It was like a It's like an R&B group breakup.
It was actually
You know, like when Bobby Brown left New Edition.
Yeah.
And he went down his own route and started doing
it. It was
so dramatic. Yeah. I can't lie, I was a very dramatic person. I still am. But I remember that day when you put up that
on Instagram.
You put it on Instagram. Didn't tell any of us.
I did tell you guys. But you guys wanted me to do it at a certain time.
Doing what at a certain time?
When I said I was going to post something, say I'm leaving. You guys knew it was coming.
I don't think I did. You emailed it.
I definitely told you guys. Yeah, definitely.
And I just saw it and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, not this Bobby Brown fella just wanting to go somewhere. And oh my God, no, it was so dramatic.
But you know, to your point though, about not being able to go to Waterstones, I think, do you know what it was like? To be very careful how I say this, because obviously the panny was not good for everybody, and it wasn't,
yeah,
you know, a lot of bad things happened to a lot of people, but the pandemic really came in and said, well, you ain't going to these bookshops anyway, so you know, I mean, you're not going to go in. Everybody was buying stuff online, they weren't going into bookshops and browsing and touching the book spine and being like, oh, I get a good feeling of this book and pick it up and then flicking through, reading the first bit. They weren't doing that. It was like, let's buy in bulk on Amazon and get packages just to get that little rush of connection that someone's bringing something to me.
I ordered so many books.
So many things came.
Yeah, so many
books. I was like proper just... But
have you guys felt like there's just been like, even in that, in the space of like 5 years, there's been, I don't want to say a decline of quality of the books that have been put out, but I feel like the books that are hyped up, right? And this might just be, you know, the books that are hyped up, and I've read quite a few of those ones, like the ones that are like, you know, yeah, buy this book. It's like everyone's talking about it. And I'm so, I'll read it and I'm like, oh. And I'm, and maybe that's like, I really am longing for like, you know, almost like that early noughties novel, when there were certain books that were being published in the early noughties, and I can't explain it, but maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe I just haven't found the books that will appeal to me. They're not being pushed out.
You want someone to write another Jane Eyre, basically?
No, absolutely not. I haven't read Jane Eyre in
another Jane Eyre,
like
Jane Eyre was written last month.
No, actually, this is something that you should all know, guys. Okay, Rafe has grown.
Oh, okay.
And as much as I, you know, love the classics, I don't really rate them as much as I used to.
Really?
I know. Like, as in, I'm very much, I'm not as strict in terms of my book, like, love. Like, currently, I'm reading Fairy Smut from TikTok, and I'm having the best time.
Yeah.
Like,
Fairy Smut.
Yes. Fairy Smut. Spicy booktop.
About bat boys. And
about bat boys?
Like, just fairies with, like, wings. And they have really hot, sexy time, and they have powers. And
sexy time.
Yes.
You know
and
what?
I cannot lie to you guys. It is the best time of my life. And it's not Jane Eyre, but it's actually so ridiculous. Some I'm like, oh, this is really great writing. Some I'm like, oh, this is terrible writing. But I love it.
Do you know what it is as well? The important thing, because another one of my motivations for bringing Mostly Lit back as well, or coming back with this, is also the fact that there's so, I feel like the landscape has shifted itself, because like in your, what you've just spoken about, like on TikTok and BookTok and the kind of stuff that's going on there, and the people that are having conversations about particular things, is really interesting. That there's there, you know, they are speaking to a lot of books that wouldn't necessarily be talked about in the public sphere. I'm seeing some books that I'm like, these are like the depths of the fantasy part of Waterstones or Boyles that you probably wouldn't even venture down unless these people are talking about this stuff. And
I'm actually in love with the character right now.
Yeah.
Like that's like, I haven't been in love with the character since I was 13, and it was Victor Hinson from Fly Girl by Omar Tyree. That was the last guy that I was really in love with.
I thought he was in love with Mr. Darcy.
I mean, not in a
I really could, you know, shag Darcy.
Oh, okay.
You know, but yeah.
Anyway,
but this is what I'm saying. So the motivations for bringing this, like for me, is kind of tapping into what it is that we're seeing now.
Yeah.
In a world that it was so different, and I think to have things have shifted so greatly from that time to now,
yeah,
is crazy. And that is to do with the pandemic. as it stands.
Yeah.
All right, so.
What are we reading?
What are we reading? I am reading the Silo series. I've started reading Wool by Hugh Howey. It's been adapted into a TV series on Apple TV.
What's that about?
It's a sci-fi novel, and it's about a silo that people are stuck in, and I'm just listening to it, just figuring out how and why they're in the silo.
Sorry, what's the silo?
So it's like a long cylindrical thing.
Wow, that 5 years have passed and I still don't know stuff.
That is...
they're stuck in a cylinder.
They usually store... What do they usually store? Corn or like...
I don't know.
They store stuff, right? It usually stores stuff, usually found on farms.
Okay.
But this silo is obviously, it's a habitable
thing
where people live. Like, you know, if you think about them sci-fi films where people living underground and whatnot, but
okay,
they're living in a silo that is long and deep.
Interesting.
So I'm reading that. I'm doing a read-along for Harry Potter. On book four.
Oh my God.
Guys, I don't know if you know, but Alex has like re-fallen in love with Harry Potter.
Yeah, man, I'm back in
and
there.
He's like currently obsessed.
I've been obsessed.
Like, obsessed.
I'm in it. I'm involved. I'm a Potterhead.
Yeah, some things never change.
They won't change. Like, you know what I mean? I have to own that shit. Like,
that's so cute. I love that.
I'm a wizard. So, like,
you're
so
a wizard, Harry.
So we moved it. So I'm reading that. Yeah. I'm at the end of Arthur Brooks is, I've actually forgotten what it's called. I haven't picked it up in a while, but he's got a book called something about happiness or finding, let me just double check what it is.
What it is, what's up?
You're reading
it. He's got a book with Oprah about, it's called Build the Life You Want.
Okay.
And I just basically saw it on a load of different podcasts. Mm. And I just thought, oh yeah, really good. I'm like 3/4 of the way through. I got halfway and I was like, I've got the point, sort of thing. So I kind of put it down so I don't need to go much further.
Yeah.
And I listened to him on enough podcasts to understand where he was coming from with the book. But it's just about the science of happiness and what happiness actually entails. So those are the books that I'm reading.
Okay.
How about you, Derek?
I'm reading. Oh, I've got it in my bag actually. I'm so happy I'm finally getting around to reading it. I'm reading Clash of Kings at the moment.
Good.
Oh, I know, amazing! Right? High five.
So I finally got on this Game of Thrones thing.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm so shocked.
Why?
Because you're like 20 years late.
I'm so late.
You are so 20
I'm
years
so late.
But you're never late though. You're never late. You're on time.
I'm on time, I guess. But
you're always on time.
I watched the show like in 2021. I want to say I watched the show.
What?
Yeah, I was in hospital and I just binge watched the whole show, and I've just been like, I think I've watched the show like 10 times now.
That's I can't believe you weren't obsessed when we were obsessed.
I thought it was nonsense when you guys loved it. I was like, what's this thing about dragons and all this crap, blah, blah, blah. You know, but I'm into it. Yeah, I finished the first book a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Reading this, The Clash of Kings is so much better written than the first book.
Yeah. Oh my God, I cannot. There's something that you don't know because they didn't include it in the series.
There's a few things like that in here. Yeah, yeah.
But there's this big thing that I can't wait for you to find out because I think it's incredible. We've been waiting for Winds of Winter for like centuries, and that guy hasn't.
Yes,
like,
yeah. And then what's it called? Song of Spring.
Yeah, Song of Spring. Something like that. And yeah. Oh my God, I'm so excited you're reading them. They're amazing. Who's your favorite character in the books so far?
Favorite character? Bran, you know.
Bran?
Yeah.
I like Bran.
Who's your favorite character in the series?
Beric Dondarrion.
Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah. He's my favorite. He was cool, man. I thought he was going to kill the Night King.
Okay.
I think he was supposed to. Because he had the flaming sword and whatnot. So I thought he was going to be the one. Then they made Arya kill the Night King, which I thought was stupid.
Yeah.
Actually, I think everybody thought that was stupid.
Very stupid. But it was epic, though. The way she did it. It was a very epic kill.
It was. It was just...
I hated the last...
I think everybody's heard this to death, how bad the last season was.
Yeah, it was. Poorly lit as well.
There were certain episodes I really loved in the last season.
I loved episodes, but then when you really think about those episodes, they become stupid again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because there are so many loose ends, like, especially with John. I'm so annoyed because there's that whole thing of his parentage and him being, you know, like...
Sleeping with his auntie.
As in. Mm. Yeah. Interesting. But I'm really happy about that.
But actually. Yeah, no, I'm loving it. I'm really, really enjoying it. Yeah. Especially at night. If I'm reading it at night, like, I get really into it and whatnot. Yeah.
I do want to get back into the books. I mean, I read the first one on audiobook and it was really good.
Yeah, it's good. The only thing I really didn't like about the first book was Catelyn Tully. Her chapters are so boring. There's one chapter where she's climbing up to see Lysa Arryn at the Vale, and it's so long. Like, it was dragged for so long. But other than that, no, it's good. It's good. Yeah. And Sansa as well. She's really annoying.
Okay, but I love Sansa in terms of, I feel like her growth is phenomenal.
I don't agree. I think her growth came out of nowhere.
No, I mean, she just went through so much. Everyone's
growth in this series comes out of abuse.
Yes. Really,
except John. Except John. John had to die, I guess.
Was he not abused by Catelyn?
No, she treated him horribly, but she didn't abuse him.
She was like, you know that.
It's abuse, bro.
Yeah. Mental. Yeah.
You're a bastard. You're a bastard, John. Sorry. The bastard's talking to me again.
Don't kill me.
Sorry. That's all I kept thinking every time I watched it. Like,
I actually just love Catelyn Stark.
She was looking at him like...
okay, what am I reading? Okay, so I'm reading the Crescent City series by Sarah J. Maas. I'm currently on the last 100 pages of the last book that's just been released called House of Flame and Shadow. This is the book that I think had the worst writing in it. This series I haven't enjoyed as much as A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is the best series. And I'm in love with a guy called Rhysand, who is the perfect man. Like, the perfect... If there was a man who was perfect, it would be him.
Is this like Bridgerton, this
no.
book? Okay.
No.
I am so finished.
Yeah, she has really great. She can write sexy scenes really lovely to the point where like I'm on like my train and I'm getting hot and flustered.
Damn.
And I have to put. I'm like, oh dear. It's that. I understand why the girls and the guys are really enjoying it.
What's it called? Romantasy? Is that the genre?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think you guys should read it. I will give you guys the book to read. I think you'll really enjoy
it. I have
it.
Grown, but yes. There's no way I'm going
to
read those
books. I think you'd really like, because I would never, and then I did, and then it changed my life.
I'll read anything.
Sure. Getting more literary, I guess. I've just finished Prophet Song by Paul Lynch, because I was like, let me read all the previous Man Booker winners, because I haven't read it. And I thought it was boring.
The man's gone now. It's not Man Booker anymore. Just Booker.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm just saying.
And I found it boring. And I'm so sorry, Paul Lynch. The gist is, you know, he needed to write it because he was a little
bit. Are we going to do that thing now where every time we dislike a book, we're going to apologize to the author first? This is what's going to happen.
I won't read
that. Don't get me wrong. I did think that... So, you know when someone writes a book and they're trying to win an award because they want to be... Like, there's something... Not that I don't have to explain
it. Is it kind of like when you watch a movie and you're like, this movie wants to win an Oscar?
Yes. Okay. Perfect. It was very much giving that. It was like, let me be a little bit, you know, avant-garde. Let me express myself in this way. Let me make it just so superfluous and, you know... And I just felt like it could have just been so simpler and still captured the beauty of... it's kind of like political in the sense that it's about Ireland and the rise of fascism and very like dystopic. And I felt like it could have just been simplified without the ramble of trying to be, you know, avant-garde and different. It won the Booker and... I went somewhere and I found out some gist that he needed the money. So he was like really broke. Sorry.
So but a regular writer then?
No.
I mean, most writers are broke. So, I mean, that's not really gist. It's like standard. Okay?
You know, but like you know, he needed the win because, like, okay, they were like, oh my goodness, yeah, yeah. So glad you got that, Pete, and hope you spent it well. But your next book, please make it a little bit better, exciting.
I'm going to read it now, just to see what you're talking about. I've got it at home. I've been meaning to read it for ages. I think I've been meaning to read all of the book alike. I read some of them, the shortlisted, the long-listed books. I read some of them, and I enjoyed them. Mm. I think right now the standard is kind of like, we want to read a book that kind of like changes our lives, but it's just not going to happen at this age. We're going to read a book and just be like, okay, this book was fine, put it away, or I didn't like that. Or if, I always say, actually, if you managed to finish a book, you didn't hate it. Because if you really hated it, you wouldn't have saw it through to the end. If I hate a movie, I turn it off.
Yeah.
I don't watch a movie I'm not enjoying.
I always have to find out
what happened.
Just Google it.
No, man, the plot, I have to find out how the plot ends. Fair enough.
I used to be that way, but now I feel like it's a waste of time.
It is, yeah. If you're not
with books, it's a bit more of a heavy lift. But with films, I'm like, I need to know what the climax says. I need to know.
But see, I always Google, if a movie's got too much climax, I can't take it. I have an anxiety attack.
Oh, that's so cute.
So I have to Google what happens. Do you know what I mean?
Like Saltburn.
I've not seen that.
Oh my God, don't. Please don't.
But I've heard people are exaggerating how bad it is.
Okay,
so I don't
watch
think
it. Watch it and let me know.
I think it's just disgusting, some parts that just didn't need to be in it. Wow. I think it was a waste of money. As in, even just like the production of it and everything, paying the actors and actresses, and it's a waste of money.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
And I think they were trying to make that guy into like this hot person, but he wasn't.
Hey, Barry.
Ray has spoken.
Yes. But I did like the other guy, the really hot guy. Oh, he's really fine. The one in...
he's much younger than you.
Oh, Euphoria.
Euphoria. I think he's quite...
I can't stand him. And I think I can't stand him because he plays the character in Euphoria so well that I cannot stand him in anything now.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Nice. So that's what we're reading.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Guys.
Derek, do you want to explain the book we're going to talk about?
Yeah, you today? Picked this.
I did, so, yes.
All right, basically, but first of all, so over you guys listening, we've got a book review that we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk about some other stuff related to the publishing industry and the book world. So, yeah. We've got the book review coming up next, so Derek, do you want to take that away?
Yes, thank you for that, Alex. Yes. you know, yeah, so we're talking about The Hours by Michael Cunningham. Pulitzer Prize winning book. I mean, a lot of people would have seen the film, because I think one of the actresses won an Oscar. But Meryl Streep's in it, isn't it?
Yeah, Meryl.
Which is interesting, because he name checks her in here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe he did that on purpose because he thought I'd have to get her for the film adaptation.
But she plays, instead of playing...
The actress.
So Meryl Streep, mm-hmm. So the scene of the where she comes in the novel, mm-hmm. she, like this other, this one of the main characters, I think, is it Clarissa or think it might be Clarissa.
It is Clarissa.
Yeah.
Clarissa sees her.
Yeah, her coming out of her trailer. But in the show, she plays Clarissa, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So who plays Virginia Woolf in the film?
I forgot the lady's name.
Continue.
But yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so that's the hours. And the reason I chose this book, actually, is not even because of the plot or anything.
Nicole Kidman plays her.
Yeah, because I've like, I mean, I haven't read any of Virginia Woolf's stuff. I tried to read Orlando, because I heard that's the best thing, and I heard it's got like time travel and stuff. So I tried to read that. I just couldn't really get on with her writing style. So I've not read Mrs. Dalloway, which is the book that this book is I guess, paying homage to. But I loved the writing. When I first started reading, I was like, oh, wow, this writing is so
perfect,
so elegant, and so precise and crisp and whatnot. And I was loving it. And then, unfortunately, it started to get on my nerves.
Do you know why it got on your nerves?
It's because Clarissa is so boring. It's like, Clarissa, she's just so... When I was reading her, I thought to myself, oh, my God, this is how people probably see me. Just being so melancholy and dramatic and, oh, my life, oh, woe is me. I was just like, I was not interested. The Virginia Woolf chapters were the best ones.
Yeah. I quite like the Sarah.
You Sarah? So, oh, her friend.
Oh, no, is it Sarah? Mrs. What's her face? Sorry.
Mrs. Woolf.
No, not Mrs. Woolf.
So is Mrs. Woolf, Mrs. Dalloway and Clarissa?
I think it's Mrs. Woolf that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that the one that was pregnant?
Oh, Mrs. Brown. Sorry, Mrs. Brown.
Mrs. Brown, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the one who's pregnant, yeah.
So I agree with you in that how I describe this book is a series of perfect sentences. Like, I just feel like...
Yes.
It's...
Yeah, I can agree with that.
It's like, it has perfect sentences. Like, I would... And what's even better is when you actually read it out loud by yourself, like... Not reading it in your head, but like actually like reading it out loud. And I remember reading it. I was reading it out loud yesterday in my living room, and I felt like I was reading to like the public, you know, like it. It's a series of really perfect sentences, but then weirdly it gets exhausting because it just gets so.
It does get exhausting.
Still so perfect, and it's like.
It's like eating too many sweets.
Yeah, like it's just it's like nice by itself. Like, I could pick out lines. Like, I remember there was this one line that I was like, this is a bloody great line. I can't find it now. But yeah, I'll try and find it for later. But I was like, oh, here it goes. Sorry, it's actually so hilarious. She mounts the stairs, feeling both weary and bridal, virginal, with her armload of flowers. And I was just like, why is that sentence so perfect? Because... Every time I like walk up the stairs or down the stairs,
virginal.
I feel bridal and virginal. Like I genuinely like if I'm
what
I'm
the
telling
hell?
You, I don't know what it is. Like, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Because I'm genuinely like if I'm carrying if I go like flower shopping and this is what she's doing. So I like 2 weekends ago I went to the there's a flower market in I forgot the name of it. It's in East London near Shoreditch and like I was carrying my flowers. Yeah, and I walked downstairs and I was like, oh.
I feel like Michael Cunningham's just basically saying women are very dramatic.
No.
Because you're holding flowers and suddenly you feel like a bride.
Honestly, yeah. I felt like
it speaks
that.
It speaks to the socialization of particular acts that we have.
But also, I was like, how does this man write? He's so good at writing some parts of women and sometimes he's rubbish at it.
I mean, he's a gay man.
Is he?
I'm assuming he's gay, Michael Cunningham. Yeah, of course.
But if you're assuming he's gay...
I'm assuming he's gay because he writes about queer life very well.
But Virginia Woolf was like gay, bi.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they all had that theme within.
Yeah,
there was
a lot of that. But she was like known to having quite a few affairs and stuff with women.
Okay.
I think that was her.
He is gay.
Yeah, Michael like putting that because he's she ended up marrying. A man, Leonard, but neither of them were like in a very
sexual relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they did love each other, but then they were known to. But she was also like, you know, in relationships with other women for like, you know, a period of time, and he also, you know, slept around. But I think it was, you know, consensual. And
an interesting note on Cunningham, though, he said he dislikes being referred to as a gay writer. according to Planet Out, he says, while he often writes about gay people, he does not want the gay aspects of his books to be perceived as their single primary characteristic.
So, yeah, that's fair. I don't think that this is a gay novel. Do you know what I mean? I think like there's elements of that in there, but this is, as Ray said, for me, this is just a novel about language, which is fitting for Virginia Woolf because I know she would kind of reshape the way people wrote fiction.
I would have thought you would have, based off of your way of writing, I bought your book.
Oh, you bought my book? Finally. Which one? The first one, I hope.
Not Safe.
What? That reminds me.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
I would have thought you would have enjoyed Virginia Woolf just because it's very stream of consciousness-y in terms of how she writes. And I feel like your writing style kind of encapsulates a little bit of that.
Do you know what's really interesting? I can't stand authors who have a similar style to me. So I can't read my own writing back. Do you know what I mean?
Because you have a similar writing to yourself.
I don't know what it is. I think it's just true. Because I just get exhausted. I get really, really exhausted.
Interesting.
There's that. So, but with this, like, because it was, I don't know, because the book is short, right? I thought to myself, okay, I'm sure he can sustain this for like 200 pages and I won't get frustrated with it. But I really did start to get frustrated with it, you know, just because Clarissa was just so boring in herself and always just kind of reflecting about her life. And what I liked it when what's his name would come into the picture.
Richard
would come into the picture. He was interesting. I wish he had chapters from his perspective. That would have been really good. Do you know what I mean? But it's really sad. I thought when I first started reading, I thought this is going to be my new favorite novel. I was so happy with the writer. I was so excited.
I think this book is possibly to be taken in smaller,
in micro doses.
Yeah, just because I do think I don't know saying how it's perfect. Like I actually think it's perfect, but because I'll read a chapter or I'll read a paragraph and I'm like, goodness, that is so nice. Like how did you sit down and just write that, the structure and the sentences and how that sounds. But it almost does feel, I feel like with writing, there needs to be a grit to it. And this doesn't have that. It doesn't have imperfection. I don't know.
Interesting.
How did you find it, Alex?
I have to admit, when I picked up the physical book, I was like, nah.
Really?
I read the first page and I was like, this is not.
Not your
this
thing.
This is not going to sustain me. I do not feel brought into this. So I actually bought the book. I was in Westfield. I bought the book. I went to a coffee shop. I sat down, began to read it, and I was like, nah. So I took it back downstairs and refunded it. And so I was like, because it wasn't bringing me joy at any point. However,
interesting.
I went to Audible and I got the audio.
This must be great to listen to.
The audio adaptation.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my god, I'm enthralled in these people's lives. I really want to find out what's going on.
I love that. Yeah.
So I enjoyed it from the performance perspective.
So it's the language as well.
Yeah, from the performance perspective, and the adaptation that the BBC did through the audiobook, and I think they captured the tension, like Virginia Woolf's tension, and her mental health. Concerns quite well, especially her interaction with Leonard and what that looked like. And it made me want to go and research more about Virginia Woolf, and I was actually doing that as I was listening and just trying to get a bit more of an understanding. And the thing is, when I was listening to it, I envisaged it all in particular colours, but I felt like everything for me was in sepia until the latest one, I think the 2001 kind of, was it 2001 or 11? Something, that the latest one with Clarissa.
Yep.
And which was in full color. But in my mind, they were like, it was like brown, kind of like, this
that's
is
so
this,
interesting.
This is stuff that's happened and happened before. And this is the experiences of women going through this in their interactions with queerness in that time. So I find it really interesting. It's not necessarily it's not something I would refer back to quite a bit. Obviously, I can't speak to the language, the written language, because obviously I didn't read the book, the book physically. But I think that the individual stories of these three women and their kind of, and their, I want to say, I was going to say co-stars, but because it's a adaptation, but they're kind of the rest, their co-characters was really, really good. And I did enjoy it.
Just because obviously with both Mrs. Dalloway and this, they're all like, it's set within the day.
Is it also about throwing a party?
Yes. Yeah. So like it starts off with Mrs. Dalloway
going to buy flowers. Oh, interesting.
And what I will say is that the reason why I think that you probably won't go back to it, because there isn't really a plot in terms of like this is like what happens and then this is what they need to resolve. And then, do you know what I mean? It seems like stories of reflection. And I think that's what, I guess Virginia Woolf really started to do in her time in terms of, making this new type of narrative that was exploring the mundane of life and just, and I feel like Michael did that so well, even if like in like the first sort of epilogue or prologue, where...
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
That was perfect, right?
It was really good, yeah.
And I think for me, weirdly, that the exploration of the mundane and the everyday and the colours and like really having a focus on like these like immobile things almost, really captured, for me anyway, mental health crises, just because, and also it reminded me of the bell jar actually, and especially in like the chapters where you could see that there was, these women were going through a lot mentally, and there's a level of absence. And so for when you say about the color, Alex, those chapters that I looked at, it for me, it was, they were in black and white, because there was just weirdly no color in their lives, weirdly, except the flowers. Like I was reading it and I was like, the only thing that's colorful for me is the flowers. And I don't know why that was something that was so like prominent in what I picked up that was colorful.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I wish I could say something interesting like that, but I think
what you said was interesting.
I think the language itself was colorful for me, so that just added a brightness to everything that was happening. You know, even if I was finding it boring, it was still, you know, glaring what was being written on the page. And I think that the things that I really liked as well, especially with Clarissa's chapters, is the way Michael was able to capture this kind of feeling that I feel, and what I think what psychologists call it, depersonalization, where suddenly everything's unfamiliar to you. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of like, what is this? Whose is this? Who does this belong to? Is this mine? Is this my life? Do you know what I mean? Kind of like the absurd, as how Albert Camus describes it, the absurd, when suddenly the farce of life falls away and you realize that nothing really makes sense. I feel like he wrote those chapters really, really well, to the point where I had to put the book down and be like, oh shit, this is gonna make me start feeling like this again. Kind of a scary feeling. As well, I thought I was gonna be kind of triggered as well by the prologue as well. But I think because he does it so well, obviously he's talking about someone's suicide, but he writes it in a way where you feel sadness, as opposed to being triggered that you might feel like that. You just forget about yourself.
Yeah.
You're just so invested in, you're sad that this is how Virginia Woolf chose to end her life, you know? And because the language is so rich and the description is so, I always remember, even as I was reading it, to like the final pages, I just remember where he's talking about how her body was stuck under the pillar underwater, and there's a little boy running at the top, and I was like, oh man, that's amazing.
My favorite part was actually that the prologue was the fact that he used the line that I think Virginia Woolf actually wrote in her note, which was, I think it's beautiful, I don't think two people could have been I don't think two people could have been happier than we have been. And I was like, even just that whole note was just so, I was like, goodness, this is such a beautiful way, not beautiful way to end your life, but it's a beautiful read.
Yeah.
And it almost made me think, just in terms of going, trying to be in her mind, how debilitating mental health can be, to the point where there is all this perfection and there is all this joy and happiness, but you just, and you can see it, and you just, it's just not enough.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think the thing that really hit home to me is that all three of these women are liars. They're all lying to themselves.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. But that really...
Oh, especially Mrs. Brown. Goodness, she's even trying to love her kid and she just is like, oh.
But this is what, I was going to ask. I was going to ask about the kind of the implications of gender and mental health and what that and what it does to us, sort of thing. The kind of like the conformity, the constrictions, the social expectations throughout the generations as it's released or in some ways not so much there with Virginia Woolf, but then it's constricted again for Mrs. Brown, but then it's released again for Clarissa. And it's kind of like this really weird, like, you know, they have their limitations and it's impacting how they view the world, how they see themselves, what their decisions, their actions, and obviously Mrs. Brown and, you know, what happens with her and you know, the decisions and choices that she makes and how that impacts.
Yeah, she's very like repressed people. And
right. Yeah. You know, she's trying her best.
Would you call her repressed?
I think so, you know.
I wouldn't especially say I wouldn't say repressed, I just say limit, actually limited.
I feel like she's buried her personality in order to become this
1950s this
wife,
woman.
Yeah, this wife to her husband, you know, which reminded me of Revolutionary Road when I was reading her chapters, actually.
But also, really didn't you? So I had this weird thing where, like, I really loved the husband, like the male characters in this, in terms of, I really liked Richard.
Yeah, I really liked.
But what did you like about Richard?
You know what? I liked their friendship, and I also read a lot about the fact that it's obviously very mirrored in terms to what's her face's life, Virginia Woolf. Mm. What's her face's? The whole idea of like they could have been a great couple together, but obviously he's gay, and I think there was alluding in the book that they, you know, maybe had that conversation or whatever. I'm not sure I'm on the right character here, but I think
I think Richard wanted it,
yeah,
and Clarissa was kind of like
sorry babes. And that was literally Virginia Woolf with Leonard.
Yeah.
For a very long time until she's like, oh, fine.
They switched roles, isn't it? Because Clarissa's looking after Richard as Leonard was looking after Virginia Woolf. And obviously Richard's starting to like lose his mind and he's, you know, deteriorating because of the AIDS virus and whatnot.
Yeah.
I would speak to that around the repression. You know, because you have to. You would feel repressed in these situations because you can't express yourself in the way. So you're kind of trying to fit into. It's like you're trying to fit into a jar that's not big enough for you.
Yeah.
And you can't. And now you're trying to do everything right, everything correct.
Even though objectively these three women have good lives.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But especially Clarissa.
But they have good lives in the context of what?
In the context of the times that they're living in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, in the lens of who? That's the point.
I mean, the world. I mean, comparatively.
They only have, they're all married. Is Clarissa married?
No.
She lives with her partner.
What's her partner's name again?
Is it Sarah?
I think it is Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah.
The one with the horrible yellow sweater.
Yeah. But I would agree with Derek in that in terms of socially, and you know, they are like privileged women. Mm-hmm. They live a certain lifestyle, and it almost reminds me of like the, you know, the sort of second wave feminism that rose up because of these women in America who lived these privileged lives, but they felt
repressed.
And it's that, like, you know, that housewife syndrome of I want more, but you know, the standards of living have been set for me, but technically they are still in a way living good to other people.
But again, but what does this is what I'm, this is what I mean.
I mean, obviously, like, everything is relative, right? No, like, no. As in, obviously, you know, their lives are not as great as like some others who are more liberated and can do things. But
yeah, I'm just saying that in the context of their lives, their freedom is conditional on you know, like even Clarissa, her context was, from what I remember hearing, it was that. She was longing. She was actually kept longing for Richard in a weird way, in the audio adaptation that I heard.
But she did.
But she kept longing for him because there was that brief moment.
Yeah, because she wanted to grow old. She wanted to grow old with him, but right. He was dying.
But that's that same longing for him, as much as she is with Sarah and has her own kind of issues with her daughter and whatnot. But there's still that longing for him there, and it's. But in the other context, they were kind of suffering in the context of their lives within the confines of what they quote unquote should have been doing. Arguably, the freedom and the privilege that Virginia Woolf has is because she is a married woman. There are privileges that she comes from, but the context in which she actually manages, the context in which she manages her life status wise. It's because she is married.
I don't think it's marriage
No, but I feel like that. Yeah, I just feel like that's what gives her extra kudos to be able to do the things that she does.
No, I think Virginia Woolf was the same with Brown. I feel like she could. I don't know.
She does come from a privileged family. Her sister as well. Like,
by which certain box have to be ticked.
But I don't think it was the marriage that made her. Of course, in that context and that time, marriage is. You know, solidify a lot of women's statuses.
I think what made her Virginia Woolf was her father. I don't know how I even know this. I think I was reading something, they were talking about her relationship with her father and how she rebelled against the age in which her father was living in. Because I think her dad was like, he was a writer as well. But he was a failed writer. I think he was really upset because he hadn't achieved the kind of success that he expected to achieve. And I think that she watched that and watched the men of his time and watched her brothers as well and how they interacted and stuff and how they treated her and then kind of rebelled against that.
They abused her and her like sisters, her like half brothers especially.
Yeah.
What I will say though, I don't know, there's this feeling that I have with this novel, right? Where I think it's a clicky novel, especially in terms of Michael Cunningham and his contemporaries and who he's writing with. It's I can almost see it, him writing it and his writing friends, you know, like also reading it and like being like, oh, I see what you did there with, do you know what I mean? Like, it just seems very, the book itself, I think, is very privileged.
It's very self-aware.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that context, I'm like, was it really so wow that it deserved to win all of these awards? Do you know what I mean? Like, we're both reading it, like, we're all reading it and we understand that, like, yeah, like, it's a perfect book in terms of the writing. It's like, yeah. But I almost, part of me feels like it's a showing offy book. And I don't know how to explain it.
Interesting. I think I kind of see where you're coming
like,
from.
Like, it's like if I was in a literary group with all of these, like, you know, fancy people.
We're going to discuss gender. We're going to discuss mental health.
Yes.
Sexuality.
And it's like,
we're going to do all these things in the context of intellectual.
Intellectualism. Do you know what I mean? It's just, for me, yeah, it has that air of it being so, like.
From the picture on the front of the book, I saw this. So I was like,
you know when people talk about, like,
I don't know.
Don't you feel like you're importing too much into Michael Cunningham? Like,
so I don't know whether.
No, he comes from that kind of tradition, though. No?
I don't. No.
I don't know. He might just sit in his room and turn these books out and talk to absolutely nobody.
Possibly.
You know?
But yeah, I definitely feel like this book wasn't written out of a. And maybe that's just me being a bit weird and silly to think that every writer sits down with this need and passion for, you know, writing, and it comes from this depth of whether it's...
Yeah, that's a myth.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's still a job at the end of the day. And so maybe that's kind of where I'm like, you're really doing a bit too much.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's... Did it deserve to win the, you know, the Pulitzer Prize for fiction when it did?
I think when it comes to the awards anyway...
When it did? Maybe.
When it comes to awards, it's always going to be like, everyone's always going to say, did this book deserve to win this award or that award or whatever?
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, a different set of judges would have chosen a different book. It's not like there was a consensus of thousands of people and said, this is the book that needs to win the Pulitzer Prize. At the end of the day, it was probably a room full of like three or four people who all decided that this is going to win the book. Or it could have been, you know, you hear like these stories about the Booker Prize. Apparently once they couldn't decide which book should win the Booker, so they flipped the coin.
That's hilarious.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard.
Or like the year when, is it them that did... We had finished then when they did Margaret Atwood and
Bernadine Evaristo,
and everyone was like, what?
Why did they choose two books?
Yeah.
I mean,
they were like, oh, it was equally, you know. I haven't read the follow-up to Margaret Atwood's one. So
I've read some of the reviews, and apparently it's horrendous.
Really?
Some of the reviews are really
just objective.
Kind of...
It's all subjective anyway, because what does horrendous even mean?
Compared to the first book, a lot of the reviews are basically like, it's so obvious that she wrote this book just so there can be a continuation of the TV show.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so they were saying it's horrendous in that sense, yeah.
I quite liked Girl Woman Other, actually.
I liked it as well, yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. I really loved, there's a chapter there on an African woman and sexuality, and I was like, oh my goodness, I think this is so important.
I think it's important too. I was a bit kind of like, why is this grown-ass woman like lusting over? Like,
yeah.
But that's real. I guess that's real, you know? And I think it's important to show that as well.
Yeah. I think there was another chapter in there. Sorry, we're digressing. There was another chapter in there of a woman who was having an affair with her daughter's husband.
Yep.
I was like, sorry.
That is real life.
Back to the hours.
So, just to round up then that discussion. So, final thoughts?
I would read it again. I want to read it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second time I read it, I will have a lot more. I will enjoy it a lot more the second time I read it. For me, it'll probably be like, so another book that's like about the language, you know, is The Great Gatsby. And the first time I read it.
Oh my God.
What, man?
Oh my God.
Just to compare. Like, about the language, you know what I mean? The first time I read it, I was like, oh, this is good. But the second time I read it...
It's been 5 years.
Absolutely blew my mind.
It's so funny. Sorry, one second. It's so funny because in this return, I've mentioned Harry Potter, you've mentioned Jane Eyre, and you've mentioned Gatsby.
I did not mention Jane Eyre.
No, I brought up Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre was not, like, one of my favourite books.
Wasn't it? I feel like it was. I feel like you used to talk about Jane Eyre a lot. No, you was a Harry Potter person as well.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
But no, I'm sorry. The book that I think I used to mention a lot was like maybe Persuasion.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Persuasion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say I would read it. But I would read it to get into the writing mode. Like, so I do this thing sometimes when I like when I'm like writing, and I'll read like some of my favorite books just before to kind of like or like. Sometimes I'll read a writer who I really enjoy the way they write, and then I'll just kind of like give that inspiration of like, yeah, you're going to write amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I do that sometimes as well.
But I wouldn't read it. Weirdly, I wouldn't read it like in order. I'll just like flick to a chapter and be like, oh, let me just get into it in that way. I think it was a book of a series of perfect little sentences.
I mean, that's not to downplay the themes in the book, of course.
Oh,
of course. Mental health and obviously the
sexuality,
the HIV pandemic
Yeah, we didn't downplay that. I think I would be interested to watch the film to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
See how that plays out. Not interested in reading it again, generally. But it was a good. It got me thinking
a
lot about just Yeah, about just the nature of some people's lives and how...
Nature of white women's lives.
Yeah, and the very, very specific experiences that entails and what that looks like, especially in the context of privilege. Mm. And then, yeah, I wouldn't read it again. I would have walked past this book in the bookshop.
Do you know what's so funny? I studied this book, right, at university, and I bought it, and I went through my...
Oh, that's it. That's the trifecta. You talk about Harry Potter, I talk about The Great Gatsby, and she tells us that she studied literature at university. That's the trifecta.
Shut the
She has letters behind it.
So I actually studied this novel, and I lost the copy because I can't find it, and I had to get another one. I'm really annoyed.
So I was surprised when you mentioned this book. I'd never heard of this book before, but you were like, oh my God.
You never heard of this, really?
Nope.
It's studied quite often.
I tell you, when I go into the bookshop, I go to where I know.
Where's that?
Young adult fiction, crime fiction, sometimes general, and then nonfiction, narrative, mostly. Fair. So I'm kind of like, those are the places I go. Those are where I feel safe.
Just to round up our review section, I want to ask you guys in terms of like what you guys are looking forward to reviewing in this next phase of Mostly Let, and what I guess the audience could look forward to. Like what are you guys...
I have no idea. I have not thought that far ahead, to be honest with you.
I have. I like, I like the idea of reading popular books, current books, books that are out. And
we did that
We
did a lot of writers.
But not necessarily, but like, you know, books that have been written in the past decade, maybe.
Okay.
I've just been interested in kind of just what's there and what's coming out. But like, to speak to what you said earlier about, you know, the kind of the standard of books that are being published at the moment as well, be interesting to speak to that. Just to get me back into reading more fluently, I suppose. And then I'll probably just build myself up to classics and older books.
You've been building yourself up for classics for 5 years, Alex. if it didn't happen 5 years ago, it's not gonna happen now.
You can't rush my process, bro.
It just might not be for you. You don't have to. It's not by force to read like War and Peace and all that. You know,
process. I want to sit down on
don't
the train.
Don't tell me you've read War and Peace.
No, I haven't read War and Peace.
I want to sit on the train and read Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina is good.
I ain't reading Anna Karenina, man.
Oh, I swear down you'll like it.
I ain't reading that.
All right.
But I meant more like, so I could actually pick up a book like The Hours and be like, actually, I'm going to read The Hours. Okay. I think things like certain fonts in books put me off.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I hear
and
it. I hear
and certain publishers have certain books that publish certain books.
You know, you made us read a book before, and the font in that book, I still hate to this day.
What book? Liquidation?
It's thick. It's the Invisible Man.
You don't like the font in Invisible Man?
No.
Oh my God,
I think maybe
I love
it's the
it.
One that I have.
That's the Penguin Classics font. No, the modern Penguin Classics font. You didn't like it?
I don't like the font. Fonts have to be gentle for my eyes for me to actually be.
You know what fonts are really gentle for the eyes?
What?
Fairy Smut.
Anyway.
I'm going to make sure like it will be my, you know.
Oh, you're looking forward to reviewing some Sarah J. Maas on the podcast?
Yeah, so I hope that you you guys, you know,
but again,
read the book.
That is the flexibility.
Yes, Derek, you have to allow yourself to like new things.
That we're
talking
about.
I think you'd love it.
I don't know. I mean, I love Twilight, to be fair. So
love
the movies. I love the movies. Like, they're actually like my comfort films.
They are very comforting. I can't lie.
Except I hate Eclipse. I think it's the worst one.
I mean, to be honest,
I'm gonna say Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Oh, I love Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Oh, so do I. Most people hate it.
No, I love it.
Okay.
Have you answered that question generally then?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, whatever. I'm looking forward to reviewing whatever books come out.
I'm looking forward to reviewing also books that have been published throughout this time that we've been away as well. It'll be quite interesting to like be like, oh, like what has been published since we've been away and that we might want to...
Yeah, tons and tons.
Yeah, that we might want to... Popular books that have come out that we might love, some we might not, and it'll be quite nice to have that discussion.
We should definitely do an episode on an American Marriage.
Oh, 110%. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Right. Alex, you love it as well.
I know.
Let me tell you something.
You know what? You know what it was?
No, let's not get into it now.
Do you know what it is?
I've got a lot to say.
I picked it up.
Like
a bit of both.
Okay.
A bit of both.
I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
I picked it up the same day I picked that up, and I just refunded them both because I was like, I've got.
An American Marriage, you refunded it.
Yeah, both of them.
Wait, have you read it?
No. I just brought them both back.
No, that book gave me heart palpitations. I thought I was watching Real Housewives of something.
Yeah, that book made me very angry. So angry.
So books of that nature. That'd be cool.
No, I'm actually. I had to put it down sometimes to be like, great book.
Amazing. All right. So
news and views.
I figured that this would be interesting just because we spend a lot of time quite close to the industry in various ways, each of us.
Not me.
Yes, you do. Miss Woman's Prize and all them things.
Yeah, aren't you a trustee?
Isn't it? Foot well and truly in the door, you know what I mean?
I have been for a few years, but I'm stepping down.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's been years as you've been a trustee.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's been a few years. Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, I just thought this would be a space to kind of talk about anything that's happening in the world of books itself. And
the dramas.
The dramas, the things that might be interesting to people who actually are interested in books.
The gist.
The things that are going on. And we can actually talk about that.
Do you guys have any gist?
Do you guys have anything that you want to say before I move on?
I've got no gist. I mean,
why is it got to be gist? Just is it news? Is it news?
Why are you getting angry?
But is it news or is it not? Is it going to be interesting or relevant?
Newsworthy. I mean, the thing is, like, I always get my book news from like my Twitter timeline. Like, I'll just scroll. I don't tweet that much anymore, but I'll just scroll and see like what dramas are happening. I think recently, what was the most recent thing I saw? What were people talking about? I think they were complaining about the quality of books and how apparently most modern books now follow this formula where a person just does a set of things as opposed to what a novel is supposed to be, what is a novel supposed to be?
Mm.
Who knows? It's always changing, you know. It changed with that book, Clarissa, that changed the way people wrote novels. Virginia Woolf changed the way people wrote novels. Mm. You know, James Joyce changed the way. So it's always changing. So when people say, oh, this is not a novel, you know, I never really understand what that means. But I did see like some discourse about it and how, yeah, modern books are obsessed with the show, don't tell. And the books end up just being like boring, just people just doing things that you just don't care to read about.
I hear that.
Which you could say The Hours is kind of like that because it is just people just doing things. And ruminating on things in the interiority though. So,
but I think they do it differently. So I read this book recently and I didn't like it.
What was it?
Yellowface.
I've not read it.
We're going to speak about that in a minute, actually.
Yeah, I personally did not enjoy it. And I didn't enjoy it because it was just too like, it was, well, I actually think it was trying to do, it was tell, don't show. But right. It was so on the nose in terms of like trying to push certain ideas of race and, you know, who can write a person's novel if they, you know, so it's about a white woman basically cosplaying, writing a novel. She basically took the idea from her friend who passed away, who was Asian, and it's her sort of getting in the process of being caught. And I didn't like it, and I thought it was trying to do too much. But I don't know how to explain it. Right? But
you disagree with the premise that you have to be from a particular background.
So it's told from the perspective of this like the white lady and how she's trying to justify it to herself, right? But I think there is. So she has like answers that on the. If you told me before, I'd be like, it makes sense. Yeah. But do you know what I mean? But now I'm like, no. Like, especially if you haven't really done the work and the research and all that stuff, right? And also you're using somebody who is from that. You're using their work. Do you know what I mean? That is just crazy. But I find books aren't, I don't want to say real, but I just feel like they're not authentic. And I felt like this book was not authentic.
Fair enough.
It was, I want to write, yeah, I'm tired of reading books where I'm where I feel that they want to write it so that it could be the, you know, Sunday's Times bestseller. It could be put up for all these awards. But it makes me feel nothing.
You feel like the books, the writers are thinking too much about the audience.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And in that sense, this book was doing that. It was trying to be so in the time. And I thought, I was like, am I 12 years old?
Yeah, like, fair enough.
You could actually given this to a 12-year-old and they would have been like, oh, I see what they're trying to do, miss. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Ooh, that's harsh. And you're allowed to be harsh, you know.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry because, like, you know, I know that it was a really big book and, you know, people
I'm
really
sure she's absolutely
it.
Fine
yeah
with her millions.
Sorry.
So the British Book Awards are here, right? And I think the reason why that kind of came up is because that's been shortlisted for the fiction.
What, as in best fiction?
Yeah.
Didn't she win it last year?
What, Yellowface?
Not Yellowface, the author. Is it RF?
RF Kwan.
Kwan, yeah.
Don't know.
With Babel. Is it called Babel?
Not that I know.
I'm sure she did. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Could have a look in a minute.
But also with, I mean, awards are amazing and they're brilliant. And I think awards, how do I say this? They're more for me, an indication of the work that is being put in terms of not just the author, but like the editors and people in marketing and all those amazing people behind a novel. I think it's important for them to get their dues. So I think whenever I see another one, it's being pushed and stuff. I think great in terms of like the people, there must be people working behind it that are, you know. I personally didn't enjoy it, but I'm sure many people did.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
That book was everywhere.
Everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere. Yeah. So.
Oh no, I feel really bad for saying.
She'll be fine, Rick. She'll be fine.
She will be fine.
Yeah, the cover was brilliant. Great artwork.
She said wonderful gowns.
Beautiful gowns, right?
Great artwork. Beautiful one.
See, and this is how, yeah, if I ever publish, people will be like, oh, this is the same babe that was cussing. This is shit.
It's gonna happen though. Like, you just expect it. People in the book world are very bitter. Like, if you, for example, like, if you give someone a bad review and they're able to write reviews themselves,
yeah,
they might try and review your book they can give you a bad review. It happens all the time.
Oh my
you
goodness.
Know,
but that's just healthy competition.
I don't think that's healthy competition.
Maybe I should just remain a critic my whole life.
That's just bitterness. Like, okay, you got a bad review and you hold it in your mind like, watch when I catch this guy's book, I'm going to review it and give it a bad review as well. That's
a lot of malice.
That's not on for me.
Again, that's what I mean. When you're obsessed enough, that's what's going to actually happen. And when you're so attached to the work,
in a way, unhealthy attachment.
So attached to the work that it means something about how you're perceived by the rest of the world. That's just where it kind of...
Do you haven't? Sorry, the bookseller news. We kind of died.
Well, yeah,
there isn't much books. I was just wanted to know what you guys were looking at because, you know, there's what trade wise, there isn't much going on. You know, just the usual pay gap issues.
Sorry, in the years I saw, I don't know when, but weren't you, Derek, involved in some like black group of authors when that big whole.
The Black Writers Guild.
Yes. Oh, the Black Writers Guild. I was. Yeah, yeah.
What was that all? I mean, obviously, I know that at the time it was, there was something maybe that got leaked in terms of, was it something that got leaked of it advances or like there was talk of how, you know,
authors aren't getting
authors
paid
in terms of especially black authors and
oh, yeah, I mean,
colour.
that's an ongoing thing. And the Black Writers Guild was created just to kind of unify all black British writers. Under, I guess, into one, not I guess, organization.
Yeah. What do you, or what do they do?
They do a lot of things. So they give out grants.
Okay.
They bring people together. They host workshops. They have kind of this speed dating things where they have loads of different editors and up-and-coming authors can kind of pitch their book ideas.
Okay.
To them like that. They just give advice. If someone has an issue, give advice. Try and promote books as well that are coming out, put on events, just kind of events as well where we like black authors can just get together and network.
I see.
Or just have fun, have a good time.
Yeah.
Or whatnot. I'm not a part of it anymore. I was, but I stepped down. And then I joined and then I stepped down again, you know, BPD. but yeah, they're doing good stuff, man. They're doing really good shit.
I think that there's still that big conversation just around black authors being not being paid as much advances. And
yeah. Oh, the publishing paid me hashtag.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was going on. Yeah. I remember reading some of those and I was absolutely gobsmacked by how much money some of these authors were getting.
Crazy.
I was like, oh my God, like in my dreams, I'll get that much.
Yeah, man. Like my experience with that, my advance was extremely low.
So it was
with no support. In how to market it or marketing it itself in order for it to be positioned somewhere or elsewhere. So I understand.
I can't lie, that will piss me off, you know, because I'm so sorry, but...
Well, if you get a small advance?
Yeah.
You're going to get a small advance.
You will get a small advance.
Like more than likely, yeah.
But it depends. But, okay, you probably won't necessarily.
I think maybe 5% of debut authors get like a huge advance.
I mean, I'm not to be greedy, but it's more so just the time it takes to write a novel.
Yeah, but they don't care about that. You know. They're just thinking, can I get a return? Yeah. What's my return going to be on this book?
Which sucks.
When you look at it from the context of that, it is a business, right? And the product is you, well, what you produce. Will the book return the money that they give you?
I don't think it should be about you.
Only do that when they have the marketing budget to put behind the book to guarantee to an extent that they are going to get the return. And there can only be several spaces for those books each year. So I understand objectively what that looks like. But on the ground, when you're actually doing the work, you're putting it out there.
Yeah, it feels horrible.
And you need to live and you need to function as a human being. And then you are then like limited in that experience on the virtue of something as abstract as your skin color. That is the most like... It doesn't make much sense.
And then you had like the rise of influencer books, and I think that when we were sort of recording, that was still a thing. But then I think it got real in terms of like you just had all of these people on social media just getting book deals.
Well,
what is it called? Sorry, we have a friend. Mm-hmm. We have a friend who calls it book deal Twitter. Ashley.
He calls it book deal Twitter,
and I laugh so much about it.
But the thing is, like, that's what I mean. You have to look at it as a business, and you have to look at it as the way that if you consider, and it's hard because when you start to categorize and talk about art, so if you're talking about fiction writing and you are serious about fiction writing and you're writing the book and that's your life, that's your art that you're putting out there, and this is how you're wanting to make your money for your life, you can always speak to that. From your perspective, Derek, but from what I'm looking at is like I can't put myself in a position whereby that is what I want to be doing full time, because it's not going to be something that will sustain me full time. And I think any artist should be able to have a way to sustain them, but it's about trying to figure out how you can create it in such a way that it will continue to sustain you. Because these people aren't like, you know, they're not there to do that. At the bottom line is, are you making money for them?
Does it work for you?
I don't know. So that's just what I've observed.
It works for me. I think you have to be pretty ambitious outside of writing if you want to be able to do much, to be honest with you. I guess I'm lucky. I use the word lucky here loosely, in the sense that I don't really have any ambitions outside of writing. I don't care. I don't care if I live with my mom till I'm 65. I do not care. Do you know what I mean? But most people aren't like that. They're kind of like, no, I want this and I want that. I want to achieve this, all these kind of things. I don't have those ambitions. So I can just write whenever I need to. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But most people can't. And a lot of people don't have the luxury of living with family as well.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? They would have moved out early.
But this boils it down to the returns. You know what I mean? Like, are you writing the book because you want to write the book?
Yeah, I'm writing because I love writing. Yeah. I want to. I'm not writing because I want to make it. I know I'm not going to make any kind of huge return. Financially.
You never know.
Financially. I mean, maybe one day, maybe.
But this is what I mean. When it comes to these sorts of careers, they are, it's like, what's the word? Is it cumulative? Like, it happens like, you know, people out here. Cunningham, The Hours was his fifth book or something like that. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like, you know what I mean? They get to a point where it's like, oh, he's an established X, Y, and Z, and we want to do
it takes a while,
but for some, they just get lucky and it just pops.
It just pops,
but
yeah.
But I feel that's a detriment to the creator.
I agree with you.
Do you know what I mean? And I feel like in any career, you start at a point. If you were to just walk out of uni and you were to just step into a 100K job, you wouldn't know what to do with yourself.
Yeah, but also
you don't even have that's a job that requires responsibility.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but
you
also think
because you have to manage people with that kind of salary.
Think about it like this, Ray. Think about it like this. Some of your favorite authors, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thought of going back to read their first couple of novels is like, why would I do that? But for some reason, in this kind of environment, this kind of publishing era we have, we're obsessed with debuts. Debuts yes. have to be yeah. great. Whereas back in the day, the debut, we knew it was going to be kind of shit.
Mm.
And the follow-up was always shitter than the debut. Because the author's still finding their feet, you know? If someone said to me, oh, go back and read Milan Kundera's first novel, I'd be like, I don't really want to.
Milan Kundera.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Or Bukowski or someone. Like, reading their first couple of books, you know that they're going to be terrible. Okay. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Or not as good as the one that
just
you start
allowing
with.
Them.
Or
allowing them
good,
to
yeah.
They're only as good as the one you start with.
Right, really. But now authors don't really have that time to breathe. One, because publishers want the return very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Also because the reading public has diminished massively. So
people are not reading, guys. Please pick
yeah,
up
you don't
book.
Really have that kind of... the space. You can't publish a book and it do terribly and it sold 20,000 copies.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So back in the day, 20,000 would be kind of mediocre. Now, if you sold 20,000 copies of your book, you're going to get another book, though. That's pretty good.
Mm.
You know, that's like £100,000 to the publisher, do you know? So yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And I think about this a lot as well because I don't think I've written anything near to what my potential... my potential output could be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But yeah, unfortunately,
that's true. I mean, I understand. Even just thinking about what we just talked about, Gelm and other, you have she started writing, you know, years ago.
Yeah. Bernadette's first book was Lara.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah, a novel in verse as well.
And yeah, like she obviously.
Yeah, but she had an editor who believed in her,
yeah.
Simon Prosser, who stayed with her all the way through until, you know, she won the Booker.
Yeah.
And she was very confident. She was like, I know I'm going to win this one day. She's like, I will get my due soon.
We are in that sort of era of that instant perfection. Even when I think about music as well and artists with like their first album, it has to be great. But hopefully we're kind of...
I don't know. I think that's kind of changed, you know, with music.
I think it's changing now.
Yeah.
So I was listening to... I'm obviously obsessed with my South African little niece, Tyler. And her first album, you can just tell that it's a first album of someone that's young and they're finding their feet and they have a great sound and they have a team that believes in them, but they have so much potential.
Right.
So I feel like it is starting to change. But I would say a few years ago... Like, even when I think about someone like Meg Thee Stallion, her debut, she did like little, you know, bits and pieces here and she had like a few EPs. But like her debut, I remember being like, people being like, this is rubbish. Like, this is a terrible first album.
Mm. But was she dropping mixtapes though?
Yeah, she dropped like little mixtapes.
Yeah, then that's kind of like practice, I guess. Preparing you, you know.
I would say it's more getting you in front of the audience that you need. You know, once you start dropping those things, you like, you know, as we've all experienced, writing chapters for essays or, you know, contributing to things, writing pieces, you know, you're introducing yourself to an audience who are then hopefully excited when you actually have a body of work that you actually want to produce. But I don't think that there's a lot of, appetite for the labor that comes in to creating the stuff. People want things churned out, people want things quickly.
So you don't think people are writing as much?
I think people are definitely writing as much, but I think that what the appetite is for...
Because everything's instant now, isn't it? Everything's demand. So we want...
You've got you know, a Clash of Kings there, right? And it's like, look how big that book is. That's intricate world building.
It takes
and detailed
time,
character inner monologues and that would take time. And the fact that he hasn't even finished the series is the fact that it takes time. You can't churn these things out. And that's what sets particular authors apart from others, because you have that's the work that goes into the stuff.
I agree, because you know Sarah J. Maas's recent book, I say it's like don't like the writing in it.
Is that because it turned around quickly? Because she blew up on TikTok.
Yep, and then people were just like, "Where's the next one?" Court of Thorns and Roses, like she's like, "Yeah, it's like coming out." She's writing it now, and there's just like everyone's online, like. Thinking, okay, like who's which book is it going to be? Who, you know, like which story is it going to be? Like which character is she going to explore? And the people are having all of these like discussions online about the, you know, like, oh, could this person end up with this person, blah blah. But that would put immense pressure on me as an author to be like, crap, I need to get this out. I can imagine her like editors being like, listen, we have a timeline, get to cracking.
I guess it depends why she's writing though. She might be just writing for the money.
Yeah,
she might not care about the quality.
Maybe.
You know, she might not care. Yeah. It's funny because I was watching. Do you watch Invincible?
No.
Anyway, it's this cartoon basically, and the first season came out a couple of years ago, and people were on Twitter, but like, where's season two of Invincible? And the last episode, the main character goes up to an author, a comic book author, and he was like, "Oh, I'm so excited for the next comic book," and the writer's like, "Well, you know, it takes time because it takes hard work to animate," and he starts breaking down why it takes a long time for the next season of something else to come out. And they had to do that they were talking to the audience, of course, and trying to explain that, like, we can't rush these things, you know, it comes when it comes, when we're finished.
Yeah. It reminds me, so I'm just finished watching Three Body Problem.
Is that any good? Samuel Tarly's in that, isn't he?
Yeah. It's really good. And also,
sorry, I know your name's not Samuel Tarly.
I was trying to remember who it was. I was like,
Samuel Tarly's in it, but also what's his name? The one that has no thumb.
Who? So Davos.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it as well.
Davos is in it. Yeah. He's like one of the big main characters.
The Onion Knight.
Yeah. And he, basically it was also made by
D&D.
Yes.
That's why I don't want to watch it.
To be honest, they're good, but they just... Anyways,
I really want to read the book.
Yeah, it's based off of a book as well. And the first season is like 8 episodes long. And the first thing I did afterwards, I was like, when is season 2? Like, I have to obviously...
That's what I'm saying.
And they were like, oh, we don't know when it's going to be. Right. And I was like, what?
There was a tweet out that I saw that someone shared on Instagram, because I'm not on Twitter. But they put out the thing that said, we need to bring back the tradition of sitcoms being 27 episodes in a season. Why is it 8?
I agree.
What are we doing? And the filler episodes in between the
I
thing.
Agree. And
I'm
also,
watching Big Bang Theory, and I'm seeing like, and it's like, these are long 22, 23 episode seasons, and they've got the through storyline, but there's some episodes which are just dumb.
Yeah, it's like Grey's Anatomy. I'm watching that at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, I'm loving it right now.
Sorry, who are you?
I know, right? It's crazy.
That show needs to be canceled and finished.
The first season of Grey's Anatomy was like 10 episodes. And then after that, it's like 20.
Seasons 1 to 8.
Don't say, I'm on season, well, Denny's about to die. I know he's going to die.
Okay, cool.
Somebody already spoiled it for me.
Oh, no, well, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more heartbreaking.
I don't know how they would have spoiled it for you. What were you?
Well, they said Denny dies.
Where were you telling people that you're watching Grey's Anatomy?
I think I was tweeting.
Good.
Yeah. I can't remember.
No, don't tweet.
That's terrible for them to ruin it.
Yeah. But he was a great character as well.
Amazing.
Like,
and oh my God, you're just there.
I'm just there.
These things, watch them in private.
Yeah, I know. So right now, I'm hating Dr. Burke. He's pissing me off. He's so annoying.
Okay.
He's being such a bitch to Yang.
Yep.
He's being a little bitch boy.
You are in for a treat.
I hope so.
Oh my God. There's a particular episode that was...
Don't spoil anything.
Okay, no, I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to say that...
I know McSteamy comes back as well. Anyway.
McSteamy. I was going to say something. I was going to say, sorry, just in this, to wrap up this discussion, I really want Netflix to stop dumping like a whole season of a show. As in, so like even like Bridgerton, they'll just drop like... 8 episodes and then people just
I love
like,
that.
I really don't because I really want us to get back to like...
They won't stop that.
Like waiting for the next episode to come out.
Yeah,
because but they do that with The Boys. They drop like 2 episodes and then it's like every week there's a new episode. They did it with Loki as well. Loki.
Yeah, but the thing is...
Loki's last season was... I loved
it. They're also seeing a drop in subscription.
Because that's because they're hiking up the price
all the time.
They're hiking up the prices.
And now there's adverts when I'm watching Amazon Prime. Excuse me, what am I paying for? I don't want to see no adverts on here. Anyway.
They're gonna drop them. they're gonna drop them all because they wanna see which ones are worth keeping. And that's why you've got like loads of shows that are just cancelled after the first season because the people aren't spiking the thing.
Although, so Bridgerton's coming in two parts, like The Crown did.
Right.
Yeah.
So they know that they can put five out, and people are gonna be like, "Well, where's the thing?" And they'll be like, "They already have it scheduled, and the next one's gonna come out."
Yeah.
And I'm people so excited, will either just wait for them all to come out. And
oh God, the last season of The Crown, terrible. Anyway,
yeah,
we'll talk about that.
I'm not watching the last season of The Crown. So
they had the Persuasion thing because you'd message me. we can talk forever.
That's been an episode.
I hope you guys enjoyed.
I hope you all enjoyed, and we'll just tune out. I've got nothing else to.
Nothing else to add? No, me either.
You got nothing else to add and nothing else to report. And we'll see you next episode. Hopefully, you are still here.
Yeah, guys.
Thank you.
Hopefully, you will welcome us back with open arms and ears. All right, bye.
Peace out.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.